Hospitals received the first doses of the long-awaited COVID-19 vaccine yesterday. Among the first people to be vaccinated were nurses, doctors, and other frontline healthcare workers. While healthcare workers cheered as their colleagues began receiving the shots, its rollout came as the United States passed a grim milestone. As of yesterday, the number of deaths associated with COVID-19 went over 300,000 in the United States. In Wisconsin, more than 4,000 people have died as a result of the disease. We'll hear stories about some of the Wisconsinites who have died from COVID-19 all through this week. Our next guest joins us to talk about the vaccine, its early rollout, and what you should know as more people get vaccinated. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the vaccine news? Do you plan on getting vaccinated once it's more widely available? If you're a healthcare worker, are you early on the list? What questions do you have about the vaccine, how it works, how things like this get distributed, and more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Dr. Patrick Remington is Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, welcome back.
Good to be back, Rob.
What are your thoughts on the early days of the rollout of the first of what's going to be a series of vaccines, Dr. Remington?
Well, we are in the very early days, and I'm really impressed with how fast the system has developed, not just the scientific research to bring the vaccine to market, but also the system to get it distributed. As you know, it's in the past, this is a process that's taken years, sometimes decades, to bring a vaccine to market. And we're seeing this happen in less than a year. So that's a real good news story.
What are some of the things that led to that relatively fast development of this vaccine?
Well, it builds on basic research that's been going on for many years. In fact, right here at the University of Wisconsin, some of the early research on messenger RNA was done to understand how cells can produce messenger RNA, but also how that might be used in a vaccine. So it's not like this was the first time somebody thought about creating a vaccine. All this basic science research had been done, so it was ready really to be put together. But it has been a tremendous partnership between the private sector and the government, not just in this country but worldwide, to really accelerate the process from scientific discovery right to implementation and putting the vaccine into individuals' arms.
Another head start seems to be being able to do a genetic map of a disease, which you couldn't do when you were developing a polio vaccine or a smallpox vaccine. China, for its missteps early on, I think people have credited with sharing a genetic profile of the virus pretty early on. Is that something that makes it a lot faster to get going on a vaccine?
There's no question that it does, because we need that information to be able to manufacture the vaccine, and having that fingerprint, so to speak, allowed the researchers to develop a vaccine much more rapidly than it would have been certainly back in the 1950s and 60s when the polio vaccine was coming to market.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from UW's School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the rollout of a vaccine for COVID-19. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Remington, there are national suggestions over the order in which people should get vaccines. I think the main decisions are left to the states. What do you think of what you're seeing so far in terms of the priority list?
Well, I think it's a good idea to think about those individuals who are at risk of becoming infected, and that would be our frontline healthcare workers. So that makes sense, not just because they're at risk of becoming infected, but also they would be at risk of transmitting the infection in the workplace. So given how hard they've worked and really putting their lives on the line, I think that makes great sense. And then the second group is those who are most likely to be harmed from getting infected, those living in long-term care facilities. We know that death rates or among those infected can be in the 20 or 30%. for people who are elderly and otherwise in a nursing home. So that group makes sense. And then the question is then, how do you go from those first priority groups then to the general population? And I think that'll be a process of each state considering how you balance the risk for the individual if they get sick and the importance of their job. If they're frontline workers or essential workers, then those should go before people who are able to stay at home, shelter in place, because their risk is quite low.
We've got the one vaccine rolled out now. There's a couple more knocking on the door in the approval process. Are we likely to see multiple vaccines out there available to the public in the few months to come?
Well, this actually happened in the rollout of the polio vaccine in the 1950s. There were two competing versions of polio vaccine. And over the years, actually, the preference shifted from the live attenuated polio vaccine to the killed vaccine. And I think that will happen here, but it's just at such a more accelerated rate. There are some challenges with the Pfizer vaccine in maintaining the cold chain, but there are advantages to being able to get that actually into place. So I think having more types of vaccine allow us to actually get more vaccine out and get back to business. I heard earlier in your radio show the challenges that restaurants and the hospitality industry have been facing, and that won't go away until we have a significant portion of the state immune through vaccination.
That's a key point there. We're not out of the woods yet. We've talked a lot about protecting ourselves from catching and transmitting COVID-19. Those rules don't go away in the few months to come, do they?
Oh, they certainly don't. Not in the months, and some may see not in the next few years. Because if you're at high risk of dying from this, if you're elderly or have a chronic illness, vaccines can reduce the risk, but they don't eliminate it. And outbreaks can still occur, especially if we don't have a high percentage of the population infected. So for many individuals, they will have to keep engaging in these safe practices, wearing masks, keeping socially distant. It's going to be a long time before the rate of transmission is low in communities, and this virus is not going to go away. This is like other viruses that have appeared. It will become endemic, but hopefully rare. And when it does occur, we can use the traditional public health methods of quarantine and isolation to stop it from being transmitted.
We're talking to Dr. Patrick Remington right now, professor emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's with us to talk about the COVID-19 vaccine rollout that began yesterday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the vaccine and its early distribution? Will you get the vaccine when you are next in line? Do you want to wait for a while? What concerns do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine with Dr. Patrick Remington, professor emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the vaccine, its rollout, what it means for the months to come when it comes to the spread of COVID-19? What are you seeing in your community with the COVID-19 pandemic? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Remington, now that people are getting this vaccine, what kind of oversight is there? What kind of things are we watching for as people get it, including, I guess, how long will it be effective?
Well, normally when vaccines are developed, there's a long period of studying where you enroll people in clinical trials. Some get the vaccine, some get a placebo. And during this time, you have a lot of people involved in the study. You can look for the potential side effects, those complications that are rare but and not serious. But what we're seeing now with the emergency use authorization from the FDA is that we have sufficient evidence to know that the vaccine is safe and effective, but we don't have a lot of experience with those side effects that can occur. And I'm sure your listeners have heard about some of those already that occur in people who've gotten early recipients of the vaccine. And what the FDA has in place is what's called post-marketing surveillance. And that is a ongoing surveillance system to monitor if there are any side effects. For example, in England, two individuals with significant allergies had reactions. And so that changed the recommendation for people with significant allergies to wait and to see what we can learn about the side effects for people with significant allergies. And so that will be important for the scientific community to be doing this surveillance and monitoring, to be looking for things that weren't apparent during the clinical trials because they might be very unusual, and then changing our recommendation moving forward.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Bianca is with us in Madison. Bianca, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering about just very basic things. Does the mRNA go into all cells, or which cells is it going into in addition to the immune response cells? And that the second part is, how long does the mRNA survive in the cells? And if there is any chance that it might, at some point, the spike protein would lodge into the cell surface and promote an immune reaction? Is there any likelihood of that in the future?
Bianca, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Remington, are those questions you've looked into?
Well, these questions involve basic biology. Many of us learned this in high school or college about how the DNA in the nucleus of the cell communicates with the rest of the cell and the cytoplasm and makes proteins. That's how our cells work. And that is through this messenger RNA. And by replicating that process, we're able to have our own cells produce that protein that SARS-CoV-2 has, that spike protein. And the good thing is that we've done a pretty good job of developing the technology to get our cells to produce that protein. And then the immune system recognizes it as foreign and begins to attack it. And so the evidence is that not only do those cells that produce that get attacked by our immune system, but that the messenger RNA then does not last. And so what you end up with is a lasting immunity in your immune cells to that spike protein, so that when later, if you are exposed to the real virus, your body already thinks that it's been infected and it's ready with the immune system to confront that virus and not let it cause serious illness.
Thanks a lot for that call, Bianca. We heard from Jeff, who couldn't stay on the line. He says he's already had COVID and is wondering if someone who's already had it would still need to be vaccinated, and if so, why?
Well, that's a great question. The recommendation right now is that if you've had COVID, either diagnosed with a antigen test or a PCR test, or you have antibodies, you should wait. You among the entire population, people who've had infection are at the lowest risk. But the evidence is that a vaccine can still help improve both the quality of the immunity at that time, but also perhaps the longevity of that immunity. We don't have a lot of experience providing vaccine to people who've been infected because the clinical trials have been done before the big surge in cases. So I think that's a good question. The general recommendation is that those who've had infection probably have immunity, and that will be protective. But that again, the vaccine would help those individuals. It's just don't be first in line. You can wait until the vaccine is widely available.
Let's go back to our callers. Lester is on the line in Milwaukee. Lester, hello.
Hey there, sir. How are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Lester?
Actually, with the issue of vaccines that are available across the world, we got China, we got Russia, we got the U.S. We have some very expensive drugs. We got a lot of poor countries around there that need vaccines. So is there really any strategies that can put in place to help these needy countries that need these types of antidotes?
Interesting, Lester. Thanks for the call. Dr. Remington, countries that don't have this kind of maybe infrastructure to produce their own vaccines and are maybe on the market to buy them.
Well, it's a great question. There was recently some media coverage about the fact that the developed nations in the world will be, in effect, clearing the shelves and taking what vaccine is available first. And I think that's unfortunate that we don't take a world view, that we think about how everybody in the world should be protected. I think how this will play out is that the first to get the vaccine will be in the developed nations with access to safe and effective vaccines. But pretty soon we're going to recognize that if we don't establish immunity worldwide, that we will be confronting outbreaks on an ongoing basis. We have a world economy. We have a connected globe in that people are traveling from country to country. And if the vaccine campaigns are not effective worldwide, then those countries that continue to see transmission will simply be the source of infection to countries that have benefited from the vaccine. So it is really, this is a global challenge, and the sooner we can help all countries in the world achieve widespread vaccination, the better.
Lester, thanks for the call. And Dr. Remington, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Dr. Patrick Remington is Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us today to talk about the COVID-19 vaccination rollout that started yesterday and what people should keep in mind as the vaccine becomes more widely available.